Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, last Wednesday night of 2021, and I have no co-host. I was going to have a co-host, but Chris has had a tough week, and I said, just go on home. I can do this, and our listeners will help me to do the show, and my producer, Chris Klaproth, will take good care of me. So we're on an open show tonight, as we like to do most of the time, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And as I say, I'm here by myself tonight, so do me a favor and help me out and ask the question that you feel is most important to you. We can have a good conversation and see if I can do, to help you answer a question that would be important to your personal finances. This would be the time to call in, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And I appreciate anything you'll do to help me as we go through this night. They normally fly if you call in. If not, they'll just slug along and talk my way through the evening as best as I can. So I always have things to talk about. But if you want to call in and lead the conversation tonight, is 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. So, I do have a topic to start with, and that is I'm always amazed at how pitiful media is at helping people with personal finances. I'll give you two examples. The first one is, a week or so ago, the market was dropping, and media wrote an article that said Omicron and the collapse of the Build Back Better bill was driving the market down horribly. The market's off horribly, and it's because of Omicron variant, COVID, and Build Back Better bill collapsing. What absolute ridiculous concept that was to say that that's why the market was dropping. And anybody who, didn't have a trained ear for what makes markets go up and down could have easily taken that kind of information and, got really concerned about it and saying, yeah, the Omicron is skyrocketing, and gosh, they're not going to spend $3 or $4 trillion on Build Back Better America. And I got to get out of the market. I better make some decisions. I better make some moves. And what absolute worthless information that was from media. Now, you say, well, Drew, they have their media. They have to say something. They can't just say the market's down today. They got to make up a reason for it. Okay, I can appreciate that. Well, here's another one. I read a lot, and when you're really dedicated to your profession, you should be reading a lot. You should be working hard at trying to develop better and better information to help your clients, and in every topic, as you're a doctor of personal finance, you need to do that. Well, I was reading today, and one of the things came across, and I saw it, and it said, "Bridge Social Security Bridge," and what every person needs to know about the Social Security Bridge. And I'm thinking, wow, I wonder what this is. This might be really helpful to our clients. What is the Social Security Bridge? Am I missing something? And when I started to read it, what they were talking about is somebody deferring their Social Security until age 70 to get the maximum benefit, and the bridge was drawing money out of their 401k. And I thought, well, that's about the, most simplistic, stupid idea, but you put a terminology to it to make it sound sophisticated. Of course, if anybody's going to defer their Social Security to age 70, they have to have other assets to live on. And it's either going to come out of IRAs or 401ks or brokerage accounts or something. You got to have assets to live on. And if you want to use a fancy term like the Social Security bridge and make yourself sound like you're more professional than you are, then go for it. But don't fool the public with that kind of stuff. Anyway, that's my rant for the evening. Chris, let's go to Mike in Rosedale, okay?
Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
How you doing?
Hey, I had a question. I'm in the TSP plan.
Sure. That's the thrift savings plan for federal employees. So I just wanted to make sure our listeners knew what you were talking about with me. The thrift savings plan for federal workers, and it's kind of like the 401k for federal employees. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead and ask.
So I was wondering, could I possibly take any of my account and put it into metals, like gold or silver?
Well, I mean, you absolutely can, and what you would have to do is you would have to roll it out of the TSP and into an IRA, and the IRA that you'd want to roll it into would be called a self-trusteed IRA with somebody who will trustee the silver or gold for you, like Sterling Trust Company, Zia Trust Company. There's lots of little trust companies, and lots of little and big, that will hold metals for you. The real question you have to ask yourself is, why the heck would you do that?
Okay, so I'm just a little worried about the direction things are going right now.
But you see, silver and gold is not a solution to the worry you have about where things are going. And there's a lot of people out there that are telling you this, that, oh, you know, inflation's coming. You want to have silver and gold because they'll outpace inflation for you. Nothing could be further from truth. Silver and gold are nothing more than a supply and demand. As long as there's less silver or less gold than there is demand, it'll go up. If there's more silver and there's more gold than there is demand, it'll go down. I don't care what inflation does, okay? Now, you might say, well, I think the world's coming to an end and we're going into civil war and I want to have silver and gold. I don't necessarily know that that's a good answer either, because what are you going to do with your silver and gold if we go into Armageddon, civil war and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I hear what you're saying. I think it's not a strategy that you'd want to implement, but if you feel like it's something you want to do, feel free.
So let me ask you one other question. Having maybe 8 years, 6 to 8 years left, and I'm in the 2030 fund.
Right.
I'm thinking about taking some allocations and putting it into different categories than the 2030, a little high risk. Is that not the right time to do it because of the amount of time that I have?
Well, if you want to hold on, I'll answer that question for you, okay?
Okay.
I just have to take a brief pause, and then I'm going to get to Jeff. And you just have to take a brief pause, and I'll be right back and answer your question for you, Mike. Okay, Chris, let's take it away. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm going to answer the rest of Mike's question. And so, Mike, I have to run, but I wanted to get this answer for you. So you have the 2030 because you've got about 8 years left to go to retirement. And you were saying, should I allocate more to some more aggressive positions like a 2050 fund or a 2060 fund or something like that? And the answer is I wouldn't have any problem with that as long as you did it with a reasonable amount of your portfolio, maybe 10% or 12% or something like that. And the way I would probably do it, because you've had 3 years of really good gains, you have 3 years of double-digit gains, 19, 20, and 21. And so what I would probably do is take 1% of my portfolio in January and allocate it to a more aggressive fund. And then February, allocate another 1%. So if I have $500,000 in my account, I would take 1%, $5,000 in January, allocate it to the more aggressive fund. Go 1% in February, 1% in March, 1% in April. Just keep doing that. And now what you're doing is if the market's going up, it'll still be going up with you. But if the market's going down, you're continuing to buy at at lower and lower and lower prices. And it's just a way of dollar cost average into a market that's been up for quite a period of time. I hope that helps you, but I've got to run to my next caller, and it's Jeff in Phoenix, Maryland, right there, Chris?
Good evening.
Yeah, Jeff, go ahead.
How are you? Yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on whether to pull the trigger on an NUA. I have roughly $100,000 in company stock, which would go from an IRA.
So let me explain to our listeners what you're talking about, okay?
Okay.
So what Jeff's talking about is he has a 401k, and in his 401k, he has company stock. And then when you have company stock in your 401k that you've been buying over a period of years, you have a unique opportunity. And it's an opportunity that a lot of people miss. And it's an incredible opportunity. And what it is, you know, you can go in and say to the 401k custodian, what did I pay for my company stock when it was accumulated in my 401k? And so let's say the company stock's worth $100,000, all right, and you paid $20,000 for it. So now the net unrealized appreciation is $80,000. That's the $20,000 you originally paid for it, and the $100 it's worth now. 100 minus 20 is 80, okay? And that's called the net unrealized appreciation. Now, what Jeff's opportunity is he has the right to take that $100,000 of company stock and anything else he has in the 401k, he can just do a regular direct rollover into an IRA, not pay any taxes on it. But the $100,000 he takes out of the 401k, he will have to only report $20,000, the cost basis of that stock, on his income tax return as he receive the cost basis, but the other $80,000 he'll only pay taxes on it if he sells the stock, and it'll be reported as a long-term capital gain. Now here's the key: ordinary income, which is what comes out of a 401k or an IRA, is taxed at least 5 to 12% more than a capital gain under current tax laws. So the answer to your question first, Jeff, is absolutely. But the key to doing this, Jeff, is you better make sure you have somebody that knows how to do NUA, because it has to be done in a lump sum distribution, number one. Okay, so in other words, everything has to come out of that account in 1 year, 2022, okay. Let's call it. Must make sure you understand what the cost basis is. Now, is your cost basis well below what the stock's worth?
Yes, it's 37, and it's about 110, so it's 37 cost basis.
So you're about $70,000 of appreciation, right?
Correct.
Now, here's a little technique that not many people understand that I want you to do, okay, is when you take that $110,000 of stock, you're going to take $37,000 worth of shares of that stock And in 60 days from when they deposit the shares of stock in your brokerage firm, you're going to pick up $30,000 of those shares and put it into your IRA. Now, why do you do that?
You said 30 or 37?
The cost basis.
Okay,
you said the cost basis is 37. Now, it's very important, Jeff, that you pick up the shares worth 37, the cost basis, and put it into your IRA. Now, what this is a 60-day rollover, and it is perfectly legal. I know it's perfectly legal. I've been doing it for many, many years. The IRS has even questioned us on it and have never come back and said, you can't do this, okay?
Okay.
But if you pick up that $37,000, and it has to be in shares because shares came out, in order to do a 60-day rollover, shares must go back in within 60 days to the IRA. And when you do your tax return in 2022, you're going to say, I didn't have any income. And now the $70,000 of stock is sitting here in a brokerage account with a zero cost basis. If you ever sell it, it's a long-term capital gain. But your basis is now back inside the IRA, deferred income until you withdraw it from the IRA. Am I making that clear?
Yeah, it's complicated, but yeah. So you would take the 30, once you get it in, because what I was going to do is do it tomorrow for effective for this year.
No. You wait until January 2nd to begin this, okay?
Okay.
This is, it's critically important that it be done as a lump sum distribution. And so you want to have the full 12 months in front of you, okay? Because what happens if you begin the transfer and then all of a sudden, you know, on January 6th, you realize that it wasn't a lump sum distribution. Now the whole thing's taxable to you, the whole $110,000. You want to have plenty of time between January 2nd, 3rd, 4th, or 5th and the end of the year to fix anything that might happen so that it's all done in a lump sum distribution in one single calendar year. Is there a reason you need to do it tomorrow?
Well, I was going to do it for this year because I wasn't working this year, and so my income will be lower than next year when I expect to go back
but
to work full time.
Do you hear what I said? You're not going to have any taxable income if you do it the way I'm telling you, right? Because if you pick up the 37,000 shares, dollars of shares, and do a 60-day rollover into an IRA, you're going to report no income, period. And you're going to still be left with $70,000 worth of stock in the company that you had, which is going to be taxed at long-term capital gain.
Okay, so do I do that before I do the rollover or after?
It's done all at the same time. So let's say you have a $400,000 account, $110,000 of it is company stock. You're going to take the $110,000 company stock, you're going to deposit it into a regular brokerage account, okay? You're going to take the $290,000, the rest of the account, and just do a direct rollover to an IRA, okay?
Right.
You're going to pick up now $37,000 worth of shares of that stock when it ends up in your brokerage account, and you're going to pick it up and you're going to do a 60-day rollover back into the IRA. And boom, you end up with $70,000 worth of stock with no cost basis, taxed at long-term capital gain, and no taxable income to report for 2022. This is a very complicated thing, and I want to make sure you do it right when you do it, because it's incredibly valuable to you, but you need to do it right.
Yeah, I'm getting confused, because the other component is I had after tax of like 21. The total account was like around 850.
And I had the after tax account is going to go to your Roth IRA.
Yeah, it's with Fidelity, and they told me to set up a Roth, which I did. So
right.
I don't have anything in it, but it would go to Roth.
And then the company stock goes to your regular brokerage account. Then you're going to pick up $37,000 and deposit it as a 60-day rollover back into your IRA. You're fully legal. You have the right to do it, but it has to be shares that came out. Shares have to go back in. And I'll tell you, Fidelity people are not as sharp as you might want to expect them to be.
I've experienced that.
So okay. Be prepared and so, make yeah, sure.
In other words, I probably shouldn't do this tomorrow. I should wait until. I'm sure you're short with time, but the one thing I'm confused about is you say pick up. Is that after it happens or I do it?
After it happens. Don't do it simultaneously. Once they deposit it in there 3 or 4 days later and see the shares in there, then go back in and say, okay, I want to pick up $37,000 worth of these shares and move them to my IRA as a 60-day rollover.
At which my IRA will already be there because I already have it. I will have that funded from the rollover.
Correct.
Right. Okay. All right. So I shouldn't do that tomorrow. I should do it in January.
Yes, because you want to make sure that if for any reason your company comes back and says, hey, you had more money in this, Jeff, than you thought you did, if that happens in the first week or two of January, now you didn't do a lump sum distribution, and now the whole $110,000 is taxable, period.
Okay.
It must be a lump sum distribution. I never do an NUA in the last month even of the year. I always have at least 2 or 3 months to get it complete and see if they come back and say I have anything else left in that account before the end of the year. I would wait until January 5th, okay?
Okay, okay, I will. And I've been separated from this company for probably like 20 years. It's actually Pfizer. So,
Have you ever taken any money out of the account?
No.
Okay, I got to run, but
okay,
if you need any
help,
call me and I'll help you through it, okay?
Yeah, I will call you. What's your number?
410-823-SAVE is the easiest way to remember that.
Okay,
and I got to run.
Thank you for your help.
Take care. Go ahead, Chris. Take it away, buddy.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and I apologize, sort of, for that NUA conversation. It was very detailed, but it was the first time we've ever had that question asked, NUA and net unrealized appreciation. But it is such a cool technique, and I wanted to make sure Jeff did it right, because if you do it wrong, it has disastrous consequences. But we're going to Gene in Columbia. Gene, how can I help you?
I must apologize. First of all, thank you for having a live call-in show instead of pre-recorded.
Oh, well, you know, that's what we do. You know, we want to make sure that people understand what should a professional advisor do. And when it's live calling, you can't fake it, man.
Now, be honest with you, I haven't listened since November, but I don't know if you've talked about this at all. I'm a pretty savvy investor over the years, and I'm scratching my head thinking, where would we be if it wasn't for these, what do they call them, the FANG stocks? These high flyers, if they weren't in the mix, some reports I've listened to on other financial shows say that really the vast majority of companies in the S&P 500 are less than last year. They're trading less than last year.
It's absolutely correct that there's been a large portion of S&P 500 stock market indexes that have actually lost money during the course of the year, but because of the incredible increase of about 50 or 100 stocks, especially the big five, Facebook, Tesla, you know, Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Netflix, you know, et cetera, you know, it's done incredibly well. But one thing I want everyone to understand is that there's a big difference between 2000, when there were incredible increases in these quote unquote FANG stocks, you might have would have called them from back in like WorldCom, et cetera, back in 2000, Lucent Technologies, and these stocks today. These stocks today are for real. These stocks today have real profit, real earnings, real potential, and they're doing incredible things for what's happening in the future. So don't disconnect with what's going on today with what might have happened 20 some years ago. And that's what a lot of investors are trying to do, say this market is phony because of these stocks. And I disagree personally, but I can't go on too long because I got a couple other callers I got to get to.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Gene's always a pleasure to talk to, but I need to run. And I got to go to John in Owings Mills.
All right, two quick ones. Can I use my RMDs to do a Roth conversion?
No. No conversions are allowed out of your required minimum distributions. It's only after you do your RMD that you can do a Roth conversion.
Okay. Next.
But let me tell you one thing, John, though. You can do a qualified charitable distribution if you're charitably inclined.
Right, I'm familiar with that.
And you should do that. If
my thought is I have some extraordinarily high capital gains, like stocks have gone up 10 times. You know, I paid 100 and they're worth 1,000, or multiply that out, right? I paid 10,000, they're worth 100. And I'm thinking maybe even with the RMD reality of a way to donate, that your donor advised fund idea might even still work.
I would disagree. I would say that the only reason that the donor advised fund would work better is if you intend to sell those highly appreciated stocks in the near future. If you do, then I say go for the donor advised fund. If you don't, remember one important thing, John, is that highly appreciated stocks get a step up in cost basis when you die. So if you're intending to just continue to hold these stocks and have no horizon when you're going to sell them, then you potentially could get a step up in cost basis. That's what my mother's 92, 93 years old. She still owns Berkshire Hathaway. And, you know, I'm sitting there saying I have no intention of selling Berkshire Hathaway for, so I'm just going to hold it for the step up in cost basis. So I agree with you. Make sure you're going to sell it. Yep. All right, buddy.
Along that same line, then, can I suppose this appreciated stock concept here? Suppose I wanted to give some of those highly appreciated stocks as gifts to my kids, my grandkids. Is there a way to
absolutely
do that
you
without,
can
without paying the cap gain on it?
You don't have to pay the cap gain on it, but if they sell it, they'll pay the cap gain on it. But what I do with that, John, is let's say I have children that are 22, 23, 24, 25, and they're going to graduate school, and so their income's like next to nothing. So I'll give them highly appreciated stock and say, here, you sell it because you're in a 0% capital gains rate right now. Or maybe I have elderly parents who have very little income other than Social Security, and I want to help them. I'll give them highly appreciated stock and say, here, you sell it because you're in a 0% capital gains rate. So that can happen, and that's an excellent strategy to consider. All right?
I just transfer the title to the kids somehow.
Yeah, you just set up an account for the children, all right? And then you transfer stock to that account. And then once it gets into that account, that child can sell the stock and pay the capital gains themselves. That's how you transfer title to them, okay?
Well, so either underage kids could even do that, no?
Absolutely, but remember the kiddie tax, okay? So be careful of the kiddie tax. So kids that are under 18 or in college, they're going to pay taxes on the gains of their parents' income tax rate.
Ooh.
So that's a difficult part. All right, my friend?
You're hired.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
I got to go to Craig in Westminster. Craig, how can I help you?
Well, hello. I always enjoy the show. Hey, I am turning 72 this year, so I went on to the calculator to see what my distribution would be. I was surprised to see it only in my wife's birthday, too, even though she's 4 years younger, which leads me to a question. If I should pass away, does she continue paying the RMDs that I would pay?
No, she'll transfer that to her own name.
Right.
You know, she'll transfer that to her own name and start taking distributions on her own account based on her age at that time.
Right, so she wouldn't have to do that until 72.
Right. If she's 4 years younger, she'll transfer it to her own name.
Okay.
Stop taking RMDs until she turns 72. When she turns 72, she'll start all over again.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering why they needed her birthday.
Because what they were looking for is if your wife happened to be like Melania Trump, 20-some, 30-some years younger than Donald, he gets to use a special table of his age and her age. So anybody that's at 10 or more years younger gets to use a special table for them and their wives than if you were just an average person with somebody who's you know, just 3, 4, 5 years younger than you.
Okay, very good.
All right.
I have one other question. I understand I could wait till April of 23 to make a payment, but then I would have to do 2 payments that year. Is that right?
That is correct. So you have until April 1st to take your first RMD when you turn 72. So you turn 72 in 22, you have until April 1st of 23 to take your first payment. But if you do, you're going to have to take 22 and 23 in 23, all, and that could not be beneficial to you.
Right.
So think it out wisely.
I don't think I want to do that. I could go ahead and make it this year and continue.
All right, my friend. Good question. Excellent question. I've got to take another pause, and then we're going to go to Jim in Ellicott City. So, Chris, go on. Take it. We'll be right back. Money, Rich, and Wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com, if your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. Our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining till He appeared and the soul felt its worth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. But I have to admit that that is my favorite Christmas song. And it's hard to listen to without getting choked up, you know? But anyway, I got to go to Jim in Ellicott City. Jim, how can I help you?
Yes, hi. I want to make sure I have a clear understanding of long-term capital gains versus just the gross income. I know, I think after the year 2019, the income tax table rates for long-term capital gains were decoupled from the income tax brackets for ordinary taxation.
And, that's true.
Yeah, so what I've been reading, I was reading an article about this, I wanted to get a clear understanding. So there's a separate table for long-term capital gains based on the amount of capital gains you've realized, and you could be paying zero, you could be paying, I think it's 10, 15, 20, and then you could be blessed with the Obamacare tax of an additional 3.8%.
Well, if you're in the 20%, you're definitely going to be in the 23.8% because there is no such thing as a 20% only rate. Because the minute you hit the 15% rate and go over $250,000, you're in the 3.8. Now, I will qualify that because if you have a lot of capital gains, you may not actually. Well, I don't think it's possible. Personally, I'd have to look at that and think about it. If there is such a thing as a 20% rate without the 3.8% extra.
Okay. So now what I was reading that, so the realized long-term capital gains do not affect your adjusted gross income.
Not true.
Okay, so how is the ordinary tax applied then? To what?
So here's how it works, okay?
Okay.
So your long-term capital gains are added up with your wages and your interest and your dividends and your Social Security and your IRA withdrawals and your business income. All of that adds up, boom, and then they take out your adjustments to gross income, and you come up with your adjusted gross income, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then they subtract other things out, like your standard deductions and your itemized deductions and your qualified business income. And you come up with your net number called your taxable income. Okay. Now, that taxable income now is going over to a calculator, and it depends on how the components, is it all wages? Is it all pension? Is it a combination of pensions and capital gains? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And capital gains are always taxed first. Okay?
Okay.
So capital gains are always taxed first. So, and what happens is, are you married or single?
Married. And, okay. We're both retired.
So let's say your taxable income came up to $100,000. And out of that $100,000, $50,000 was long-term capital gains, and $50,000 was pensions and Social Security, okay?
Okay.
So what would happen is the first $50,000 would be taxed as long-term capital gain. But, so you had $100,000, you go down $20,000 till you hit the 12% tax bracket. So $20,000 would be taxed at the 15% tax bracket. And then everything under that would be taxed at the 0% tax bracket for capital gains until you use up the rest of the capital gains. So let's take this again. You have $50,000 of capital gains. The 12% tax bracket kicks in at about $81,000. So let's just call it $80,000. So you have $100,000. The first $20,000 is going to be taxed at 15%. The next $30,000 is going to be taxed at zero because you're now in the 12% bracket. The 12% bracket says no capital gains are taxed at zero. And then the last $50,000 is going to be taxed at the 12% bracket until it hits $40,000 of income. I'm sorry. It's going to get taxed at 12% until it hits about $10,000 of income, and then it's going to be taxed at 10%. That's the way the calculation is going to go. See, a lot of people have a misunderstanding that when you hit a new tax bracket, everything's taxed at 22%. And that's not true. It always goes through the progression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you have $100,000 and 50 of it is capital gain. You take the first amount down to the $81,000 level, or the $80,000 in our example. And that's taxed at the 15% rate because you're in the 22% bracket. And when you're in the 22% bracket, capital gains are taxed at only 15%. And then the next level is taxed at the 12% level, but capital gains are only taxed at zero during that period of time. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the income, which is $50,000, the first $40,000 is going to be taxed at 12%, but then you're in the 10% tax bracket for the last $10,000, they're going to tax that at the 10% rate.
Okay.
Am I making that all clear? Or do you want a bigger number? You want me to throw it in $450,000? If I throw it in at $450,000, mm-hmm. now you're over the 20% bracket, okay? And then you got to take yourself down to where the 20% bracket breaks, which is around $430,000 or $50,000, something like that. So now you're in the 15% bracket, but you're way over the $250,000. So now you have to pay the 3.8% for Obamacare. But once your capital gains get down below $250,000, now they're only going to be taxed at 15%. So let's say you have a $450,000 of income with $300,000 capital gain. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen is the first 10 or 20,000 is going to be taxed at 23.8 because you're over that magical number where the capital gains used to be under the old tax laws. That's how they're using the capital gains rate of 20% is under the old tax laws, which I think was around 430 or so thousand. And then they're going to tax you at the 15% rate, but because you're way over the 250 with that capital gain, now you're paying the 3.8% also, so it's 18.8. Once your income gets down to 250, then they're going to just tax you at 15%. But then once you get down to $100,000, because remember I said you had $450,000, you had like $350,000 of capital gains, let's say, now you're at just $100,000. Now they're going back to the regular tax tables. Now you're 22% for the first $20,000. Mm-hmm. Then you're 12% for the next $70,000. And then you're 10% for the last $10,000.
So the capital gains are progressive unto themselves, just like the ordinary income, as you described.
Yes, but they're always the first income taxed.
Yes. Okay.
So they always look at the last dollars of your income as capital gains, not the first dollar. So you always start... If you have $100,000 of income and you have $50,000 of capital gains, the first $50,000 is always considered capital gain. All right?
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Have a good New Year.
All right, buddy. You take care.
Enjoy your show. Thank you.
Thank you. So I've only got about a minute or so left, and I wanted to end the year with just some thanks. I want to first thank Chris Klaproth, who has been just a tremendous producer. He's an excellent guy. I hope you all get to know him better. Maybe we should have him on the air with us more, but he's kind of shy, you know, and he plays good music, but he doesn't understand music very well, and he can't guess the bands as well as I can. I also want to thank my co-hosts, Maddie Bennett and Mike McCarthy and Chris O'Shea, who have helped me tremendously during the years. But the most thing I want to thank is all the listeners who have said so many gracious things over the years, you know, that they enjoy the show, that they appreciate the advice and so forth. We do this for you, and we want to make sure that it is truly beneficial to you. And so nothing, you know, makes me happier than to know that it's truly beneficial to you and answering your questions. And so let me just bless you in the end of this year. May you go into 2022 knowing that the Father loves you and blesses you and keeps you all the days of your life. May He make His face turn toward you and be compassionate to you. May He look in your eyes, eye to eye with you, and give you peace for the rest of your life. So this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Turn.